Session number 28933, Cyril Pierce, part 4.
Cyril, you were telling me about your problems with the American discipline.
If you did something wrong, you could be given a demerit. If you got 4 demerits, then you had to do a tour, as they call it, marching around the parade ground. You had to wear your full kit marching around the parade ground, and every time you passed the Stars and Stripes, you had to salute it. But once again, I was so experienced, I didn't get any demerits. I was crafty. They could wash you out for anything they wanted to in the US Army Air Corps. They had what was called hazing. That's where there were always 2 classes at each flying school at the same time, and the upper class was supposed to haze the junior class. That is, chase them about, make them stand to attention, make them do all sorts of silly things. But as the course I was on, I say, was composed with a lot of experienced men, we wouldn't have it. And if an American tried anything like that with us, we'd simply stand and face him and say, so and so, or we'll do you. And I know one or two of the so-called who were really given a bloody good hiding because they tried to do things like this. So
how did American authorities react to this?
Well,
they backed off, because
at West Point, their code of honour states that if you see any cadet infringing any of the regulations, you are expected to report him. In other words, you're supposed to grass on a mate who's done some little thing wrong. And that's the way it passes all the way through. And most of the instructors, of course, were West Pointers. And they were trying their hardest to keep up that kind of cross-eyed discipline, but it didn't work. We refused to do a lot of these things. Anyway, I survived on that, and then we had then to go on to the next flying training school was Napier Field, Dothan in Alabama, where I was on Harvard's. And again, we had to do 60 hours, making a total of 200 hours training. And when you compare this with those poor so-and-sos in the First World War, who'd arrive on the squadron with about 10 hours solo experience, we did 200 hours before they thought we were fit to fly. So I feel very sorry for those First World War boys. And then, of course, so that on my 25th birthday, I graduated with my American wings at a full ceremonial parade where we were handed our American wings and an RAF officer then handed us our RAF wings. Now, how are we doing? I was given 3 days leave, so I simply went back to a friend I'd met in Macon in on my basic course and spent the 2 nights with his family.
And how did you interact with the American public?
American public, fine. We got on very well. We got on very well with the girls because they loved to hear the British accent. And of course, we like to hear the Southern accent. And don't forget, Florida, Georgia and Alabama, where I was trained, are all in the South with the full Southern accent. We got on very well with the girls indeed. I won't go any further than that. The only time I had any problems was when I was on my basic training at Macon in Georgia, where I was in the bar with another English cadet, and some American servicemen came in. Now, they started taking the Mickey out of the Limeys, and I thought, well, we're gonna be in trouble. There were four of them. They were all privates in the American Army. I could see they were itching for trouble, and unfortunately, the bloke I was with wasn't a policeman. If he had been, I could have said, right, we'll kick two of them in the bollocks straight off, and then we'll have a go at the other two. But he was a nice young Scots bloke, and I knew he'd be useless, so we just had to sit there. But fortunately, there were some ground crew from the airfield where we were training who came into the bar. There were about five of them. They saw us, they could see that there was trouble coming on, so they simply came up and stood by the side of us and said to these American soldiers, right, if you want trouble, we're with these two Limeys. And they went off. And that's the only time I had any antagonism at all the whole time I was in the States. You could, when you got to a flying school, you could hand in your name, your religion, your age, your hobbies, and they'd try and pal you up with an American girl who lived with her own family. They could look after you. I didn't fancy this. To start off with, I say I was 24, and I liked to drink. I liked beer. I wasn't very fond of American beer, but I still drank. Because I know you're going, it was partially operated by the church, you'd have to go to church services. But you would have meals, you could spend a weekend with these families. But I and the other two coppers I was with didn't bother. But a lot of them had wonderful times. They were taken all over the place, had good meals. Quite a few of the cadets on the course I was with kept in touch. Some were kept as instructors, because when you finish flying, they always they commissioned some people, and they were kept back as instructors. Because, of course, if you were flying in America, you had to be commissioned. And there were quite a few who met American girls and married them. Len Trevelyan had a narrow squeak. He was already, as he told you, he was already married. And the bloke, the girl that, who was after Len, had married this other bloke, and he's doing very, very well indeed. Then, of course, when we'd finished flying, we were posted back to Moncton, the transit camp in Canada, where we went back by train. And I think we played solo most of the 2 days we were going back by train. We got to the transit camp. Then we went to Halifax, where we put on the troop ship, which was the Stirling. Where is it here? Stirling Castle. Stirling Castle. And we came back in a full American convoy. Battleships, aircraft carriers, frigates, destroyers, American troop ships, British troop ships. And as it was an American convoy, then all the troopers were dry. No alcohol was allowed to be sold. But as on the Montcalm going out, we were allowed to buy beer. We weren't allowed to buy spirits. I don't know why, but we were allowed to buy beer on the troop ship going out. But on the Stirling Castle, it was completely dry.
Now, Cyril, whilst you were in America, America came into the war. Yeah. Did things change at all?
No, they were already in the war. They were in there from the 7th of December, don't forget. Just before I got to 7th of December, 1941.
Right, yes, you're right, yeah.
So they were already in. Well, of course, I didn't... We were so busy this training was very, very intensive. And don't forget, we weren't, while we were training, we weren't allowed out of camp except from 12 noon on Saturday until midnight on Sunday. You weren't allowed off camp at night, and all the camps were dry. Couldn't buy any booze at all. But we were very, very busy flying because the weather was so wonderful we did a lot of flying. And so I was only able to get out for a few days at the weekend, and then all I was interested in really was having as many drinks as I could get in that time and maybe meeting a girl or two. So I didn't see much of the outside world at all. And so I couldn't tell you if there was any change between before the Americans came into the war and afterwards. But obviously, from all the reports, they were gearing up for it. Now, how are we doing?
So, what happened when you actually returned to England?
England, we came back on the Stirling Castle, I'd say. We got to Liverpool on the 8th of... 8th of October, 42, we went to a transit camp down at Bournemouth, and I was there for a month where we were waiting. We weren't doing much there. We were just eating, sleeping. We did the odd bit of drill. And we were simply waiting to be posted to the flying schools. And then I was posted to... Morton, number 6 Pilots Advanced Flying Unit at Little Brissington on the 3rd of November 1942, where we were flying Oxfords. And I was quite happy with this. I didn't want fighters, I wanted bombers, because I'd suffered from the bombing in London and I wanted to give the Germans some of their own back. So the majority of people who got their wings wanted fighters, but I didn't. I stipulated quite clearly bombers. But of course, as Bomber Command were in dire need of pilots, most of those who wanted fighters were posted to bombers. And therefore I was posted to Little Brissington, which was flying Oxfords, which are twin engines. I'd only flown on single engines in my training, and therefore I needed to be converted onto twins, which was Oxfords. That was in the winter. As I say, I got there on the 3rd of November, and I was there till the 15th of March, right throughout the winter. And the weather there, I can tell you, was a bit different to what we've been experiencing in the States. I don't ever remember flying being cancelled while I was in the States because of bad weather. It's possible it did, but I don't remember. But I know that at Little Brissington it was being cancelled all the time because of bad weather.
And what did that course entail?
Well, it entailed the fact that you had to be a competent twin-engine pilot. We also had further courses on navigation, because obviously we're going to be bombers, and therefore if we had to make sure that the pilots knew how to navigate in case the navigator's knocked out, although we had been properly taught about that at ITW. And apart from that, we did nothing much except fly Oxfords on complicated courses and bat flights where we had to use the flight recording system, where you had to fly along on a beam and then follow directions in order to get to a certain course on map read. That took a fair amount of time, that course, the bat course, although it was part of the training. And it was while I was at Little Brissington, of course, that I went into Cheltenham. They operated a bus from the camp to Cheltenham for people to go in there, because it was 18 miles away and there was nothing at Little Brissington. And it was there that I went on this Saturday night and went to a dance there and met Doreen, who is now my wife. And we fell very deeply in love with each other, I can tell you. And she had to hitchhike from Gloucester to Cheltenham. I had to get a camp bus. Now, all the WAFs did hitchhiking, and they, as far as I know, they were completely safe. So when we said goodbye, contrary to the best brought up person in the world, Doreen had to see me to my bus stop where I'd catch a bus and go back to Lissing. Only the one, if I missed her, I got an 18 mile walk. And then she had to go and hitchhike back to Gloucester. So it's all the wrong way round, wasn't it? Anyway, we survived, and it was throughout the whole of that winter that we courted each other. And when I was posted, I knew I was going to be posted to number 2102, Morton in the Marsh. I knew there was trouble ahead, because everybody who was trained at Morton in the Marsh was posted to the Middle East. You went to Morton in the Marsh, you were due for the Middle East. Now that meant you could be in the Middle East for 3 years or two tours of duty. You couldn't come back otherwise. So that meant I was going to be separated from Doreen for a long time. So I had to somehow get her to marry me. And I conducted my own blitzkrieg, and she agreed. I'd only met her family on one occasion beforehand. She was 18, I was 25. They weren't very happy at all, but eventually they agreed, and I got married on my embarkation leave when I finished at Morton in the Marsh. I haven't spoken about that, Morton in the Marsh, yet. Although I was married, there was nothing at all for me to get a Dear John letter, but fortunately they'd none arrived. And so, as I say, we were deeply in love with each other. We still are, and we're having our diamond wedding anniversary on the 17th of April next year. Now, do you want me to go through Morton in the Marsh or not?
Yes, please.
Right. I was posted to number 21 Operational Training Unit, Morton in the Marsh, on the 16th of February 43. This was conversion onto the Wellingtons. Now, the Wellingtons, the training Wellingtons they were using there, were the 1Cs, which was the second version of the Wellington. The one that crashed in Loch Ness was a 1A. 1C was an improvement on the 1A, but it still had props that you couldn't feather. The engines were Pegasus, about 950 horsepower. Pegasus 18, yeah. They're about 950 horsepower, and they were pretty clapped out. But the course there, of course, meant you had to join up as a crew. The pilots, navigators, bomb members, wireless operators and gunners, all arrived at Morton in the Marsh. We all had a lecture about what it was like on ops, what the training was going to be like at Morton in the Marsh. And then we were told, right, go out and sort out your own crew. So I had to go out. And I knew a chap there, who Jack Morville, who was a wireless operator, and he had been a regular in the RAF. So I picked him as my wireless operator. then I got Eric Scott as my bomb member, because he'd been trained in the States and had been washed out for some minor infringement when he got about 160 hours of flying in, which was a complete waste of time. Because by that time, if you did something relatively silly, you carried on with the training, but under the American scheme, they could wash you out. So I picked him as my bomb member. My air gunner, Ted Peters, was a Cockney lad. I picked him as my gunner. And then Eric Scott was a young Scotsman, he was only 18. And so I thought, well, I'll have to train him as my navigator. So then we started our training, which of course was flying the Wellington. And the first thing, of course, you had to know about was the fuel system, how all the various cocks operated, and the bomb aimer had to know exactly the same thing, and we had to pass a test to make sure we knew that. We were trained, of course, to long distance flying, a lot of night flying. We were taught how to corkscrew, evade the German fighters. It's quite a complicated manoeuvre. And to get used to flying the Wellington on operations. Had no problems. As I said, I told you privately, the Wellington was a wonderful aircraft. And when I finished the course there, that was on the 20th, I was given 2 weeks embarkation leave, that's right, because and that's when I married Doreen on the 17th of April 43. I left the OTU on the 15th of April 43, got married on the 17th, and so there's a lot of work had to be arranged at Morden, where Doyne was living, to be done. Then after a fortnight's leave, I was sent back to Morton in the Marsh, which was number 311 Flying Trainer Unit, where we were on the Mark 10 Wellingtons, which had two Hercules 1650 horsepower engines. Much better engines than the 1C. And there was George, as we call it, on it, which was the little navigation device where you could set a course and the plane would fly itself. But that was about the only difference, the more powerful engines. And we did that course there, and then I was posted from there. We went down to, on the 27th of May, 43, we went down to Portreath in Cornwall, and then we flew from Portreath to Ras El Mar, which is near Fez, in French Morocco, it was then called, across, and we had to go through the Bay of Biscay, but as there were quite a few German fighters, and we would be all on our own, we had to go some distance out into the Bay of Biscay, and that was a 9-hour flight with the we fortunately met no trouble, and we found our base and landed very successfully, to find we were in a French Foreign Legion barracks, who only had holes in the ground for their toilets. Now, do you reckon that's enough for today?
Was that the reaction of everybody?
Oh, yes. I don't know who went there first, but he came dashing into the back in the hut and say, hey, all the bogs are just holes in the ground. But they did have two imprints of your feet, where you put your feet on that, pulled your trousers down, and hoped when you crapped that it went straight down the hole. And it was the same, apparently, in all the Foreign Legion barracks. And, of course, as you know, the Foreign Legion spread right across French Morocco, French Algeria, as it was then, and Tunisia. I don't think they went into Libya, which was next door. Of course, the ITIs went there, didn't they, before the war? It was the same everywhere.
Sure. What were the what was the food like and the general living conditions?
Now, for the life of me, I can't remember what the food was like at these. We were only there, I think we were there for I haven't got much, just Portreath there and Ras El Mar. So we were at Portreath for one day, then we flew into the map there. There's Fez, and Ras El Mar was very close to Fez, and then we flew from there to a town which isn't on the map here, Blida, Castel Veneto. That's right. So we were at Ras El Mar just for one day, then we flew on to Blida the following day.
And did you know what squadron you were going to at this stage? You were still ferrying.
Not at this stage, no. And while we were at Blida, we were in a Foreign Legion barracks, and then we were told we were going to fly to Kairouan in Tunisia. There we are. So I was, and we would be joining 331 wing. I flew into Kairouan in Tunisia on the 1st of June 43, and landed at the airfield with a brand new aircraft. It was, of course, the one we flew out, brand new Wimpy, and I was told I was going to on 142 squadron. A sister squadron was 150, and that was, as I say, at Kairouan. Now, there it is there, Kairouan, see it? Now, Kairouan was the fifth most holy city in the Islam religion. Mecca was number one, but Kairouan was number five. It was quite a fair-sized town. And there was a lot of underground water there, so there was many fields of watermelons being produced, and there were six Wimpy squadrons there, so there were three wings, three different airfields, all around the town of Kairouan. All they'd done was bulldozed a level landing strip out of the desert, and it wasn't complete sand, it was a kind of earthy sand that was they were able to cultivate, and that was it. There was just a straight strip of sand which was had been leveled out very well by bulldozers, or whatever the equivalent was in those days. I don't know, did they have bulldozers then? Anyway, and we were, of course,